Welcome, everyone, to another installment of the MP Access Podcast. I'm David Wharton, Editor-in-Chief of Mortgage Point and the Five Star Institute. We're talking to folks here at Government Forum in Washington, D.C. Joining us today is Jackie Torres of CINLAR. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So we are here just in the aftermath of an afternoon of meetings with the National Mortgage Servicing Association, the Mortgage Servicing Executive Alliance, with a lot of the industry professionals that we work with, meeting and discussing some of the hot priorities and challenges that the industry is facing. Let's go to the very beginning with you and talk a little bit about how you joined CINLAR, how you got to your role that you're in right now as SVP of Core Operations. What does that entail? What does your day look like? And how did you end up in the industry?
So a little bit of background about CINLAR first. CINLAR is the largest mortgage subservicer. We service just about 2 million loans in 50 states and territories for different client bases. Right. Our clients are banks, credit unions, and independent mortgage bankers. We serve as an extension to our clients and their borrowers. And our goal really is to simplify complex mortgage servicing activities that need to happen, right? When you're a larger organization, you're able to implement process changes and things at an easier scale.
Right.
So we feel that we have the ability to provide that to our client base. The one thing, if you haven't heard in the news, that I'm kind of excited to share is that we are joining the PennyMac family later on this year.
That's exciting.
Now, PennyMac is the leading nation's mortgage lender and servicer with significant capital strength and a deep commitment to subservicing. So I think it's a great partnership between the two organizations.
That's great.
Now, your original question was, how did I end up back at CINLAR and what exactly is core operations? So I've been at CINLAR now my second time around of duty.
Okay.
For just about 9 months. And core operations, simply put, is everything non-default, non-cash related. So from everything from servicing transfers, our escrow, our taxes and insurance. We actually spend a lot of time talking about taxes and insurance today in our meetings.
Right.
Through our investor reporting and credit reporting. It is really the focal point of merging the middle office environment in a traditional servicer or subservicer, along with the borrower-facing side of the organization. And the collaboration is important because it helps us understand how we impact one another and truly helps us break down those silos so that from a homeowner's perspective, we are appearing more fluid and consistent in how we're handling and servicing their loans.
And how did you end up in the industry in the first place? I know a lot of people we talk to, you hear time and time again, nobody ever thought, I'm going to go into mortgage servicing. It's one of those side paths or things that just people kind of fall backwards into. So what was your path to join the industry?
Very similar experience.
Yeah.
It started out as a collector in college with the goal of being an attorney at some point. And I landed in collections, Spanish-speaking, on the weekends and nights before it was, you know, a normal thing to do in the early 2000s, and I never left.
Yeah.
A lot of what I studied still applies today, along with, you know, understanding all of the changes and just the logical factor of what we do every day, and it's exciting. So stayed here.
Do you think there were lessons that you learned at that very first job that still you carry over to what you do today?
Yes. Being in a call center is definitely one of the toughest things to do.
I can imagine.
Hearing the borrowers call in and it's those calls that stay with you for the longest time.
Yeah.
The lessons that stuck with me that actually are still translated in what we do daily are really how to simplify that communication. How to explain it in a way that if I can understand it as a college student can help the person who just made more than likely the biggest, you know, purchase of their lives understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And taking the time to listen. You know, many of us now in the industry are not focused on keeping our call times down. It really is about advising and consulting the homeowner on the other end and answering their questions. And taking it back to 20-something years ago, it's very much what we did at that point as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of a full circle moment.
Well, you have been described as a strategic operational leader with a strong data focus. Could you talk a little bit about how data shapes the way you think about servicing performance and decision-making and kind of everything you do?
Yeah. So my early on, went from call center to analytics and just fell in love with the ability to tell a story with numbers. Not only to tell the story, but to confirm the story that you think is happening.
Right.
So as my roles continued to evolve, the focus really was on how do I make sure that what I think is happening is actually happening through our data. And it's, in a way, credibly challenging what I think is going on.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, a lot of times you end up realizing that it is either telling you something slightly different, and then you're able to pivot that way and change that way. When you're looking at data and looking at analytics, it really does become more critical when you're forward looking. It's great to see all of the insights of what happened in the past, but with all of the things we're doing with transcription of calls, really knowing what happened in the current day or the prior day, it allows us to really change our focus and really get out on the floor with our agents and let them know that, you know, let us know instead of the, what are we hearing on the ground or on the floor, it becomes we're confirming it. And now we can either adjust training, we can adjust our communication, and we can adjust our predictions of what we think is going to happen.
Yeah. It's that difference between taking the lessons of what's happened, but now what do you do with it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actionable.
Yeah.
Right. If you have numbers in front of you and you don't action on them, then they're just numbers in front of you.
Exactly. Exactly that. Well, I know Cinlar is one of the largest subservicers in the country. Could you talk about what are the biggest operational challenges that you guys are facing in the day to day or in the long term? What do you stress about? What are you thinking about? What are you trying to solve for?
The constant change.
Okay.
In the 20 plus years that I've been in the industry, the only thing consistent is the amount of change we all go through.
Sure.
But now balancing it with the homeowner experience and the things that are changing in the borrower's lives, right? It's that delicate balance of making sure we're following everything that's required and sticking to our requirements and regulation, but also making it a experience for the homeowner where it's not just a task or a chore off of their list. And it sounds easier said than done, but in order to do that, you really do have to break down internal walls or silos that might be set up, because most of us would have set up departments to handle certain tasks, right? In order to reimagine how to provide a better experience.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to break those down and put the puzzle together in a different way. And balancing that with all of the regulation that needs to happen is probably one of the things that we're focused on and continue to be focused on. You know, have to continue to evolve.
Could you unpack that word experience a little bit? What does that mean for you? Is it just as simple as however they need to make contact or however that they will respond best, you're ensuring that that's supported, or is it something more holistic than that?
It is meeting the borrower or member where they are.
Okay.
Right? We are, just like everybody else, focused on providing a digital experience. We live in a time now where everything is instant gratification. You can get an Uber in 2 minutes. You can get lunch in, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's providing a similar level of service if that is what the person wants, right? There are still people, you probably know some, parents, friends who may not have adopted to that style. And it really is ensuring that there's consistency.
They still want a phone call, or they still want their letter. Yeah.
They still want to talk to somebody. Yeah. They still want to walk into a branch. For our credit union base, their members walk into a branch. We want to be sure that they have the same experience there that they do with us, same information sharing. And it really comes down to making sure that if I'm sharing information digitally on the web, through text message, through email, on the phone, that it's all sharing the same message, so that you're creating that good experience.
Well, I feel like this question we're kind of already touching on this, but could you speak to a little bit about in a business that's as complex and as regulated as mortgage servicing is, what does operational excellence mean to you? What does that look like on the ground, essentially?
We determine operational excellence by the ability to engage in different manners, like I just mentioned, mm-hmm. but also being able to quickly adjust the message that we're sharing. Going back to some of the things that we're doing with transcription of calls or mining some of that data that we have is we may assume that the message is clear, right? For some of us, again, who have been in the industry a very long time, we want to make sure it's not just something that we understand. So it is truthfully deploying an idea or putting an idea out there, running it through a proof of value, validating that what we thought we would get out of it works, and then opening it up to the rest of the portfolio, for example. When it comes to excellence, it's trying all of those ideas. Nothing is really off of the table unless it's completely not allowed.
Sure.
But being creative in the contact and the experience, but then measuring it, right? Because we can think that something is a great idea to put in place, but there is no tangible benefit coming from it, whether it's a better client experience, whether it's a better homeowner experience, or whether it reduces call volume or any of the things that we typically measure from a metric perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I would sum up operational effectiveness.
Within that process, are there ways that you have to focus on balancing efficiency and scaling without losing sight of that guidestone of the borrower experience? Or is that just really kind of part and parcel of what you're talking about?
They go hand in hand.
Yeah.
It goes, again, back to the idea of, I have an idea. Let me put together a sampling of loans. Does it make sense? Are the things that I thought were going to happen actually coming to life in the decision? Or do we need to adjust it or tweak it? So a recent example, if anyone's been following along our escrow journey, we have released our conversational AI agent. And what will happen is we started less than a month ago, and we're on version 3 or 4-ish. I like to say 4, but we've switched design here and there.
Sure.
But each time it really was looking at, this is what our end goal was. Did it meet that? What was the feedback that we're able to get? And then how do we adjust it? So we see our containment percentage go from, let's say, 13% to 50 or 60%. Keeping in mind that while we would all love to have 100% go through there, remember,
sure,
not everyone wants to talk to an agent. They'd rather talk to a person on the other end.
Right. I'm curious, are you seeing that breakdown change at all as existing homeowners get older, or as the new homeowners come in? Are you seeing major shifts as far as preferences of, like you said, some people want to talk on the phone, some people are okay with AI. Like, are you seeing shifts already as far as what borrowers want or need as far as communication?
Not as much as I think we would have expected.
Okay. Interesting.
And I'll clarify that point with borrowers like the experience a lot of times that they had also in the origination space. So they may have had an experience up front that now they're attempting to translate into servicing.
Right.
What we do is when we board a new loan onto the system, we go through all of the things, including helping them walk through the website, because change can be scary regardless of you know, how technology advanced you might be as a person.
Yeah.
Any type of change is scary. So your typical range or demographic of, you know, utilizing an app or a phone is still in line. It's just not that I think everyone has adapted as easily as you would think that they, you know, ask Siri to order something
sure.
that they would want to talk to someone on the other end. But I also think it's because we're being very mindful of the approach too. We're not throwing a lot of AI at the borrower. We're not throwing a lot of changes in that direction because we want to make sure that when we do launch those changes, they're impactful and they provide that operational effectiveness that we're looking for and the efficiency.
Excellent. Well, I know you had recently spoken about escrow communication and coming back to the word confusion, borrower confusion, like you spoke of a moment ago, their confusion they feel around rising taxes and insurance. Is that something you could speak of? I know that's a topic that we hear a bunch of just sticker shock or whatever you want to call it of people not being prepared to deal with the insurance prices or some of those other factors or taxes. Could you speak a little bit about what you're seeing on that front?
Yeah, we actually talked about it today in NIMSA this morning. It's not uncommon. I think we're all experiencing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it comes from different parts of a borrower's journey within owning a home. For some, it's when they first buy the home, they know what their escrow is payment is and what's in their account for the next year. Then we run an escrow analysis and it tends to go up a little because it's not pre-funded. Then you run into the homeowner that is experiencing an increase because insurance is going up and taxes are going up. What the focus has been and will continue to be as we continue to provide more information is really educating the borrower that even if you have a fixed rate, right, your principal and interest payment will remain the same, your whole housing payment will increase. So it's adjusting how we're communicating with the borrower, not only at the time of escrow analysis, but how do we now preemptively tell them that there might be an increase coming, that there is something changing mm-hmm. in their loan, doing a little bit more than the standard once a year.
Just to lessen that surprise when it comes down.
Yeah. Because we can see through the use of data that you'll start to see those shifts as tax bills come up. And if it helps some homeowners budget differently or know that this change is coming, I think at the end of the day, they have a better understanding when they get their escrow analysis, or they should have a better understanding that it's not us as a mortgage servicer or subservicer increasing their payment. It is their taxes or the insurance that's affecting what they're paying.
So when borrowers are confused or frustrated or financially stretched, strained, whatever you want to call it, what role does operations play to both get ahead of that, to prevent them from reaching that point, and also, you know, if they've already reached that point, how does operations play a role as far as trying to resolve that?
We implemented about 2 years ago a program called CARE in our call center, specifically customer service. And what it's meant to do really is to advise the borrower or member calling in and really listen to what's happening. It really is to show care.
Right.
Part of the reason why we did that was so that it does give the homeowner the ability to call and confide and for us to also then have a conversation that's not just directed at, well, it's your, going back to the escrow example, it's your taxes and insurance, like there's nothing that we can do. It then becomes, have you considered a change in insurance mm-hmm. or there may be options available at your taxing authority. So we partner with business partners that would help us provide more specific information for that homeowner to help them make that change. We're available to answer their questions as often as needed, right? Like it's one of those things, again, that they can view the information online or they can call us. And then if we're unable to resolve and the loan continues into delinquency, then that all of that information translates into our home preservation center.
Okay.
Right? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't start and end in customer service. It is a life cycle of their journey, and we want to make sure that we're doing the best that we can from a borrower perspective.
Well, I know we've talked a little bit touched on the topic of AI, which obviously is a big topic right now.
Yeah.
It's obviously everywhere. Everyone's trying to figure out how to get around of it, you know, to approach it with caution, but also to not fall behind. So within your role and the operations kind of mindset, how do you prioritize technology investments? How do you prioritize how you roll it up, you know, how cautious you are, how aggressive you are, and also balancing that against just the reality that it's a very regulated industry and there's a lot of pieces to keep mindful of?
We add another layer to that too with the client, right?
Yeah.
So as a subservicer, it really is balancing what our operational needs are along with what our clients would like to see or would expect as well. it's important because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that anything that we are doing is of value, not only internally, but that our client also sees the value in it. We're an extension of them. We want them to also see the benefit in their borrower having a great experience. How do we balance what we release and what we decide? We've, just like many other organizations, have created structure. There are learning labs. We come up with ideas that start in the operation and really put it into the lab, put it into testing, and then see if it really does do what it's intended to do.
Yeah.
The one thing that we are, as an organization, focused on is making sure that we're not just taking a process and putting it through some sort of AI engineering or transformation. It really is looking at the life cycle and making the benefit across that handoff. If you think about servicing, someone in a cash team can touch a loan, someone in escrow can touch a loan. So it's not looking at the pieces, but looking at it holistically for the best benefit. And then if it doesn't work, it doesn't get released. Or we adjust and continue to tweak.
Well, obviously, the role of a subservicer is a very specific and unique one within the industry. So when it comes to mortgage servicers, could you talk a little bit about figuring out what it makes sense to do internally versus what it makes sense to partner with a subservicer on? What does that thought process look like?
For us, as a subservicer, we're able to provide scale.
Yeah.
The ability to extend the benefit of all of the things that we've built, our governance models, our technology, the ability to customize the experience through use of our business partners helps. And it's what we do day in and day out for us. So it's a little bit of a slanted or biased question for us. But the benefit of having a subservicing relationship truly does come down to an extension of a client and having the best experience possible with that scale.
Okay, interesting. So a lot of companies talk about transformation as an ongoing process. From your perspective, what does that look like, separating real, actual, meaningful, operational transformation as opposed to just adding on complexity or making things, you know, bolting on stuff that may not actually provide real value as opposed to just making things more complicated just because you're trying stuff?
Looking at the whole process is where that whole transformation does take place. If you start to look at improvements in the smaller segments, sometimes those segments don't fit into place nicely, and then it becomes more complex and convoluted as you start adding layers. So we a lot of times need to take a step back, for lack of a better expression, take it apart and put it back together with all of the handoffs. In transformational projects that we've done, there is benefit to any of the interactions that are happening, and not just for the one area that may have provided the idea. I keep going back to escrow. We'll stay on theme. But with escrow, how does the escrow team look at not only the communication and how it gets sent, but when it gets sent?
Okay.
If you leave it there, it's like you're benefiting just the escrow team. If you take it a step further and now go into our call center and our emails and all of that, it really becomes, let's look at this as a communication schedule, for example. They partner together between the two departments, set up the ability for seamless release of the communication.
Okay.
And then at the end of it, if we're doing things right, the call center does not get inundated with a lot of calls. Right. So it really is taking it out of just looking at escrow and looking at the different parts of the organization that would be touched by that process changing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've talked a lot about how you measure change and looking at the data and trying to draw meaningful conclusions from those numbers. So are there certain metrics or signals that you watch on a regular basis to try to gauge whether you're seeing real operational improvement?
We have a lot of metrics that we
look
at.
Sure, I figured you might.
We do. It's not only the metrics because it's important to look at those. It's your compliance mm-hmm. and your regulatory control structure that we look at. But it also does come down to what is actually happening within the call center. What are okay. we hearing and what are we seeing? So we measure not only the widgets happening, but what impact those widgets might have on like escalated requests mm-hmm. and things of that nature that really do tell us if something is working correctly.
Okay.
We measure it on the inverse too. So if we implement a new project, we're always listening to see if there's an issue, but mm-hmm. now we are listening every day, every few hours for 2 weeks just to make sure that we didn't cause a downstream impact. Right. So it's using those metrics in different views,
yeah.
both forward facing and backward facing, to really make sure that what we've done has worked.
Well, I know you have, over the course of your career, you've led teams through multiple different servicing functions. What are some of the lessons you've taken away as far as how you build alignment across operations and servicing and communications, all these different pieces of the puzzle? How do you build that that through line across all that?
It's bringing people to the table.
Okay.
Making sure that everyone has a voice at the table and understanding why we're making the change. Part of that for me as a leader is listening to the different viewpoints on why or how we should do something, and then either credibly challenging us or pushing us to do a little bit better or think of it differently,
mm-hmm.
and then taking a seat back and letting us try it.
Yeah.
Right. At the end of the day, making sure that our leaders, my leaders, feel comfortable in making that decision only develops them further and then allows them to continue to develop their teams. And by the time, you know it, we don't need everybody at the table
right.
because Jackie is now thinking about how it impacts Jane and Jill and everybody else in the organization because we're collaborating together.
Yeah.
And we're watching out for one another.
Are there specific blind spots that you think companies run into most often as they try to improve their operations or scale or just try something new?
Yes, it is the impact of not knowing what you could affect downstream. Okay. So if you implement a change and maybe you're not familiar with a trigger that causes a letter mm-hmm. to go out, for as an example, you can cause something to go wrong. How we've solved for that as an organization is, just like many others, we've implemented enterprise change management.
Mm-hmm.
So there goes that seat at the table. When we make a change, people get alerted about the change and have the ability, if they were not included in the conversation, to now say, wait a minute, this is going to impact my process, or this
right.
is going to cause an issue. How do I fix it? How do I get involved? Or even if it's not that, how do I get more information about that change? Maybe it's something I do want to implement, something similar, because I think it might be beneficial for my team. So
yeah.
it works both ways. It stops something bad from happening and gets creativity and curiosity also going so that the other teams can think about how to implement similar changes.
Well, this next one I feel like ties back to what we were talking about, you starting your career out in the call center and just the lessons you took away from that. So could you speak a little bit about how important communication strategy is in servicing, especially when you're having to deliver news that might be bad news, might be stressful news, might be complicated news? How important is that, and how do you approach that kind of communication strategy?
We try to keep it as simple as possible.
Okay.
Limit the use of jargon, if at all possible.
Sure.
And then really explain it in a way that doesn't cause additional questions. For us, we know taxes and insurance will
right.
always change either up or down. For someone that might not be in our industry or as familiar, they may take it literally.
Yeah.
So it really is understanding the literal and figurative angles of that communication and removing any or as many questions as possible that would come from it.
I guess some of it's just kind of trying to put yourself in that, mm-hmm. that person's head and try to anticipate, what does this look like if you don't have all the information that you do on this end?
Yeah, yeah. Entirely.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way to do it. I recently challenged one of my leaders to say, take this communication and let's just walk out on the floor and ask someone if they're understanding it the same way that we
are.
That's
interesting. Yeah.
Right. And you'll get a different perspective.
For
a lot
sure.
of times we're comfortable in the way that we communicate, and we tend to communicate as we interpret and receive information. We need to think about it a little bit more
yeah.
globally.
Could you talk a little bit about what, from your perspective, strong leadership looks like within the operations role, specifically here within this industry that, as we've talked about, is complicated and regulated and has lots of different moving parts?
A strong leader is someone who listens.
Okay.
Listens to not only the issue at hand, but brings other opinions to the table or other theories to the table, and then isn't afraid to make a decision. The important part about that is that if you're doing that and you're providing that example to your team and your leads, they then start to think about things in a similar way and then credibly challenge back. The best ideas have come from a random idea I might have had, and then I walk into, you know, one of my peers or one of my leaders' offices, and we just have a conversation, and it just evolves and flourishes from there. So that strong leadership is the interaction at every level, is the communication and the transparency, and really talking in about the team. It's not about understanding how to do every single thing. It really is putting the trust in the team that you've built and leaning on them for their expertise and then guiding them.
Does some of that come out of events such as this one? I know you guys have just spent the whole afternoon meeting with other peers. Is that a crucible for building leadership ideas as well, just being able to speak with other folks that are dealing with the same thing you're dealing with or different aspects of the same thing you're dealing with?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
In the 3 years that I've been involved in different types of organizations, a lot of times we're all facing similar problems or issues. Some have solved it, and it just those conversations strike that curiosity or that thought that you then take back and then start talking to your teams about. So yes, it's important, not only inter-organization, but outward in the industry as well.
Yeah. Well, we're coming towards the end here, but for servicing leaders that are thinking about where the rest of 2026 is headed and even the year beyond, what should be at the top of their operational priority list? What should be at the top of the cork board or whatever that they're thinking about day in, day out?
For the rest of 26 and 27 and beyond, I think we're all focused on similar things when it comes to trying to project what the homeowner experience is going to be like with the increase of taxes and insurance, but then also implementing all of the changes that we know are coming from a loss mitigation perspective. It's very similar to the way we function day in and day out, is just adapting to the changes, implementing them, while also making sure that we're providing the best borrower experience at the end of the day.
Well, building off that, my last question is, are there areas that you see the most opportunity for servicers to improve, both in terms of performance and also in terms of that all-important borrower trust that we've spoken about a bunch this time?
It's doing a little bit more than we currently do.
Okay.
And I say that, obviously, while keeping things like cost and things in mind, but the way that you build trust with a homeowner, with a borrower, is by not just taking the payment. It is, if they're calling in with a problem, really trying to solve that problem at that time, and then consistently giving the same answer.
Short and simple. I appreciate that.
It's easier said than done sometimes.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us here, Jackie. We appreciate you carving out some time and sharing your insights. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to today's episode of the MP Access Podcast here from Government Forum. We've been speaking with Jackie Torres from Cenlar, and we will see you on the next installment of the MP Access Show. Thank you. Thanks for listening to MP Access. Stay up to date with daily mortgage news, featured stories, and our latest episodes of the podcast at themortgagepoint.com. Don't miss out, and we'll see you next week.